This is Wilderness and Wildlife, presented by the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. This is a half-hour program featuring commentaries and interviews with wildlife and wilderness advocates that relate to the unique natural environment that we enjoy in the wildlands of the West and all across America. I'm your host, Jay Schell. Today, we're interviewing Jill Fritz. She's a senior director in the Wildlife Protection Department of the Humane Society of the United States. So welcome, Jill. It's good to be talking with you.
Thank you for having me.
So you're located in Minnesota.
That's right, yes.
Isn't the Humane Society got a main office in Washington area?
Yes, we're the nation's largest animal protection organization with our main office in Washington, D.C.
But
we have staff and state directors located all over the United States.
Oh, I see. So you've been with Humane Society for how long?
Since 2006. About almost 18 years now. Yeah.
So tell us about the Society's mission and what your particular activity is in the area of wildlife.
Well, we cover a lot of aspects of the humane treatment of wildlife in our department, like the treatment of captive wildlife in roadside zoos and prevalent animal acts, the confinement and killing of wildlife on fur farms. We also educate the public and government officials and animal care professionals about humanely preventing and resolving wildlife conflicts. And my section of the department addresses the inhumane and unsporting practices like trophy hunting, baiting, hounding, and wildlife killing contests.
Oh, I see. So are there any federal laws that protect animals and wildlife in particular?
Yes, there are definitely federal laws like the Federal Endangered Species Act that protects our imperiled wildlife species at the federal level. And so one of our goals is to constantly be defending these species from being removed from the protection of the Federal Endangered Species Act, at which time, as you know, they are returned to state management only inevitably to be put in the crosshairs of trophy hunters.
So do you work with the U.S. Department of Fish and Wildlife?
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, yes, we do. We often submit petitions and statements and testimony to the Fish and Wildlife Service to ask them to not delist wolves and not delist grizzly bears. So definitely. Mm-hmm.
But I assume that you're heavily involved at various states at the state level, right?
Yes. I mean, our goal is to increase legal protections for animals through both the legislative and the regulatory process. So in order to do that, yes, we often engage in that policymaking process at the state level.
Is there legislation that you're advocating with the House of Representatives in Washington?
We actually have, the HSUS is part of a national coalition called the National Coalition to End Wildlife Killing Contests. And just recently we have joined in supporting a new bill by Representative Steve Cohen of Tennessee, H.R. 8492, that would prohibit wildlife killing contests on federal public lands. So that would be lands managed by the National Park Service, the Fish and Wildlife Service, Bureau of Land Management, U.S. Forest Service, and the Bureau of Reclamation. So that bill has been introduced and referred to committee, so we're just now encouraging people to contact their U.S. representatives and ask them to support that legislation.
And what kind of reception do you get generally?
Do you mean when we're lobbying or supporting?
Yeah, from House members.
Well, at both the federal and the state level, it really depends on the legislature or the commission or whatever governing body we're working within. There's no doubt that our wildlife protection staff and our state directors have been on the receiving end of some pretty hostile remarks and actions in some hearings, but we've also developed mutually respectful relationships with policymakers because they understand that we're there not just to represent the wildlife of the state, but also we're representing their own constituents who care about their state's wildlife. And those constituents expect their elected officials and appointed officials to make decisions that are humane and ecologically sustainable and based on the best available science.
And are there other entities that work with you or that you cooperate with in the efforts that you are making in with legislatures?
Oh, absolutely. We almost always work with a very broad coalition of animal protection organizations, conservation groups, scientists, hunters, farmers, veterinarians, wildlife rehabilitators. They've all joined with us in efforts to end wildlife killing contests or to protect wolves in states from trophy hunting and recreational trapping. So definitely we always work with a broad coalition of stakeholders.
And how do you work with do you identify particular legislators that you think will carry legislation for you?
Yes, and almost always we do that through our amazing HSUS state directors. So we have, in most states, a state director who obviously lives in the state, is a state resident, and is familiar with their state's policymaking process. So they're the ones down there at the state capitol every day working to advance our priority issues. So if, say, we wanted to introduce a bill to ban wildlife killing contests in a particular state, our state director would, go to legislators that they know are friendly and are open to this type of issue and ask them if they would like to introduce a bill to ban wildlife killing contests. Or they might have a good relationship with their state wildlife commission, which is, as you know, our appointed officials that make rules and regulations concerning wildlife in the state. And so they might ask their wildlife commissioners to introduce such a ban. And that's exactly what has happened. What happened just last year in Oregon. Our state director worked with a broad coalition of groups in the state to ask the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission to introduce a rule to ban wildlife killing contests, and they did just that on September 15, 2023. The Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission approved a rule through a unanimous vote to end wildlife killing contests in the state. And then just a couple months later, the New York legislature did the exact same thing.
So do you communicate mostly by phone, or do you do a lot of traveling to various states to assist state directors in their lobbying efforts?
The latter. We, us in the Wildlife Protection Department, often travel to states to say there is a hearing on a particular issue. The state directors are very knowledgeable on the issue, but they also benefit from our experience and expertise on that particular wildlife issue. So we're happy to join them in the hearing and provide testimony in support of that. We've done that recently on bills in Illinois and Michigan, Nevada, Oregon, you name it. We are definitely glad to help our state directors by providing testimony and assistance on these measures.
So there are some particular states that you're focused on right now?
Yes, we are. Just in the past year, we've been working on bills to end wildlife killing contests, to protect wolves from trophy hunting and recreational trapping in Minnesota. We are working on bills to prohibit the intrastate sale of ivory and rhino horn products. And and numerous other pieces of legislation. So we're constantly working on advancing policy to protect wildlife from some of these cruel and unsporting practices around the country.
If you were successful with the Cohen bill, the 8492, with the House of Representatives, it would mandate prevention in all of the states. Is that right?
Well, it would only affect killing contests that are held on federal land. So if there's a national park preserve in a certain state, that ban would only cover that preserve in that state. It would not cover the entire state. But it would, of course, also have to be, and a companion bill would have to be introduced in the Senate as well and make its way through that way and be signed by the president. But yes, it would only impact those federal lands managed by the Park Service, Fish and Wildlife Service, BLM, Forest Service, within the states. But I will add that 10 states now have also banned wildlife killing contests. So there's a significant amount of space within the states now that where they can't hold killing contests anyway.
And are those wildlife killing contests that you're lobbying against, are they confined to mammals only or reptiles and other species as well, birds as well?
It depends on the state and the rule or the bill that was introduced. So some states like New Mexico and Vermont prohibit just coyote killing contests.
Mm-hmm.
And other states like California, Arizona, Massachusetts, Colorado, Washington, Maryland, Oregon prohibit killing contests that target fur bearer species. So, you know, whichever, you know, coyotes, foxes, you know, it depends on every state's definition of fur bearer species. But traditionally, as you know, it's coyotes, foxes, bobcats who are the primary targets in killing contests. And then other states in New York, I have to go back and review the language again, but they may just cover all wildlife species. So that would include, for example, some killing contests target crows. So it would cover those as well. But it all depends on, you know, what the bill or the proposed rule language actually says as to what species it covers. But they all cover coyotes.
Uh-huh.
There's no difference there. All 10 states prohibit targeting coyotes in killing contests.
I suspect that Texas is one of the most formidable states, maybe Idaho as well, in attempting to prevent contests.
Yes, Texas is definitely number one in terms of the number of killing contests that are held and the unbelievable amount of species that are targeted, including mountain lions.
Mm-hmm.
In killing contests. And they're the home, of course, to the notorious West Texas Big Bobcat Contest. But then second is, it may be surprising, is Oklahoma in terms of number of killing contests held. And then Pennsylvania in the eastern U.S. is by far the largest number of killing contests in the eastern U.S. But New York was also up there as well, and they have now banned them. And in the western U.S., Arizona and New Mexico were considered to be two of the worst states for killing contests, and they were two of the first states to ban them.
So
now much of the western U.S. has already prohibited wildlife killing contests. Washington, Oregon, California, Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado. And there is pending regulations in Nevada as well.
Well, Texas. When I think of Texas and killing contests, I think of rattlesnakes. What is the HSUS position there in regard to snakes down there?
Oh, absolutely. We oppose those rattlesnake roundups and snake killing contests just as much as any other species targeted in killing contests. So I know that advocates and advocacy groups in Texas have been long trying to address this issue, and I'm confident that they will keep fighting to see an end to these killing contests, including rattlesnake roundups in Texas. Yes.
Well, let's move on to trapping and snaring. Do you get involved in those kinds of issues?
We definitely do. We oppose the use of any kind of trap with the intent of capturing and killing animals for recreation and the fur trade. As you know, trapped animals suffer horrific injuries and distress, and they're killed by inhumane methods like bludgeoning or stomping or suffocation. And trapped aquatic mammals like beavers and otters can hold their breath for extended periods, so they suffer even more prolonged terror as they struggle before drowning.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, unintended victims like pets and endangered wildlife also suffer in traps. So we definitely get involved. 10 states so far have limited or banned the use of traps and snares, and recently states like Vermont, advocates in Vermont are working to add their state to that list, and we support those efforts. And we're also supporting bills and regulations that would do things like shorten trap check times. As you probably know, states like Nevada and Oregon, for some species, have ridiculously horrible long track check times, and then we're constantly trying to work with officials to shorten them to the 24 hours that is standard in most of the U.S. Or our bills, there was recently a bill in Vermont to require signage or tags on traps, or, you know, require placement of traps away from public roads or paths and trails to protect pets.
What about baiting? What's your position in regard to using bait to attract animals?
Right. Well, of course, the use of bait for any kind of hunting really calls into question the principles of fair chase and sportsmanship, but particularly for the hunting of bears, which is where we do a lot of focus, you know, piles of baits of, you know, fatty pastries and sugary pastries and greasy food and even chocolate, which, of course, is toxic, are dumped in the woods to lure bears in for an easy kill. And they also put out piles of bait during the fall when bears are in, you know, what's called hyperphagia, or that frenzy eating when they're preparing for hibernation. And researchers have found that baiting bears with human foods can cause significant health issues to the bears. And then the bait sites also concentrate species that can lead to the spread of disease like rabies and mange, or in the case of deer, baiting deer, chronic wasting disease, of course. So we definitely oppose that. And the National Park Service is also one that bear baiting increases potential for human injury and death and conflicts and, you know, and causes the death of bears.
Are there any states that prohibit baiting now?
Yes, many states do prohibit the baiting of, if you mean the baiting of bears.
Uh-huh.
Yes, only allow, if they allow bear hunting at all, they allow only what's called fair chase hunting of bears. So they don't allow hounding or baiting of bears.
There are also devices, electronic calling devices and thermal imaging devices that are used in hunting. What's your position in regard to that?
We definitely oppose those devices. Electronic calling devices mimic a wide variety of sounds, including like dependent young or prey in distress, and those are used to lure unsuspected carnivores into gun range, usually, you know, coyotes or foxes. And it manipulates their natural curiosity and compassion to just get an easy kill. And of course, as you know, they're often used in wildlife killing contests as well. So definitely oppose those.
How about hunting with hounds?
That is a whole other horrible issue that we definitely oppose. We've seen hounds used to chase black bears, coyotes, bobcats, foxes, raccoons. And believe it or not, in Wisconsin, even allows the hounding of wolves. if they are delisted and return to state management in Wisconsin, packs of hounds can and have been used to track down and hunt wolves in that state. But, you know, it's just another issue of fair chase. What is fair chase? There are packs of radio-collared hounds that, you know, chase their quarry in the roadways where they could be hit by cars. They trespass on private and protected lands. And then in particular for bears, again, it's a situation where they, you know, it's basically pitting dogs against bears. If the bear is bayed on the ground, then they can turn and fight and kill the hounds that are pursuing them. And then research finds that, you know, if the bears are pursued in the hot weather in late summer and early fall, which they are in many states, particularly in Wisconsin and Michigan, then bears experience overheating, possibly leading to death because of their heavy pelts and the fat layer that they're building up for hibernation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just bad all around. So we definitely oppose the use of hounds to chase any wildlife.
What's your what's the HSUS relationship to the various tribes and policies on their lands for dealing with wildlife?
Well, it depends on the issue, and I can only speak from my personal experience. I was the Michigan State Director for many years, and in 2014, we led efforts to successfully overturn two wolf hunting laws in a ballot referendum in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing that, we worked closely with the Ojibwe tribes in Michigan, who, as you might be familiar, the Ojibwe tribes consider the wolf to be a brother and an important part of their creation story. And so they are strongly opposed to the recreational hunting and trapping of wolves. And so the Ojibwe tribes across Michigan stood alongside us in that effort to stop the wolf hunt in Michigan.
What's your position in regard to the capture of wild animals for display in zoos?
We definitely believe that the best place for wild animals is in the wild, and they shouldn't be captured from the wild for zoo display. But if wild animals must be held in captivity, the best place for them is, we believe, a sanctuary that's accredited by the Global Federation of Animal Sanctuaries, which is a very rigorous accreditation process. And also the Association of Zoos and Aquariums maintains the highest standards for zoological facilities for zoos.
There's a wolf organization here in Washington that Wolf Haven. They have wolves that have been injured that they have in captivity, or some of the wolves have been born there, but.
Right. I believe they just recently acquired their accreditation by the Global Federation of Animal Sanctuaries.
Uh-huh.
So that's great.
Good. So the breadth of species is primarily concerned with fur-bearing animals.
For us, yes. And like I mentioned, we cover a lot of issues, you know, captive wildlife, wildlife on fur farms. But and then urban wildlife and suburban wildlife. But my section of the department does mainly focus on America's carnivores. So wolves, brown and black bears, mountain lions, bobcats, coyotes, and foxes. Yeah.
And in the last two decades, there are at least 72 mountain lions that have been killed. I assume that you are very much involved with the Endangered Species Act and want to focus on those animals that are endangered or threatened.
Well, yes. Currently, it's just wolves and grizzly bears are protected under that. Sadly, mountain lions are not, and are, as you know, hunted and trapped and hounded in most Western states. So we do absolutely do our best to continually try to increase protections for mountain lions. They're just federally protected in Florida, I should say. They are there, but we did see a little bit of progress recently. Wildlife groups worked with the state of Texas, their Parks and Wildlife Department, to at least get some minimal standards for mountain lion trapping in that state. And I believe also curtailing or preventing the use of mountain lions in captive hunting facilities as well. So a little progress there, but it is very slow going, sadly, for getting any protection to mountain lions.
So what kind of work does the Humane Society do in modernizing wildlife management in order to reflect public values and demographics?
Right. Well, yes. As you've seen in the past few years, that issue of wildlife governance reform has really been in the spotlight. And it's because of a few reasons. First, there's been a remarkable shift in public values and attitudes toward wildlife. Like more Americans are embracing the idea that we should coexist with wildlife instead of just seeing wildlife as something to exploit for human use. And research has also found that more Americans have positive attitudes toward historically misunderstood species like wolves or coyotes or sharks. And then even hunting groups like the National Shooting Sports Foundation have done polling and found that while Americans still support hunting for food, say, or subsistence, many fewer Americans support trophy hunting or fur trapping, for example. And then the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service now reports that wildlife watchers outspend hunters almost 6-1 nationwide and outnumber hunters 10-1. And the U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis finds that hunting and trapping only accounts for less than 1% of all outdoor recreation spending nationwide. So all of these factors have meant that leaders in the field of wildlife management are going to state agencies and saying, hey, you need to adapt to these changing public values and attitudes and recognize that it's the non-consumptive users who are spending so much more money. And those are your constituents too. And so there's a growing movement in the country now, led by a new organization called Wildlife for All, that is going to state commissions and saying, hey, you know, we need a seat at the table. You know, the vast majority of Americans who don't hunt or don't trap, or even those who do, but care about protecting wildlife from unsporting practices, should have a seat at the table and should have their voices heard. And it's quite remarkable. Just last year, the state of Maryland became the first state to pass a law requiring representation by a wildlife protection person on their commission, as well as a non-hunting related outdoor recreation representative and a wildlife scientist. So, and advocates are going to other states as well to say, you know, we need to reform how wildlife is governed in our state.
Well, Jill, I think we've exhausted our time, but it's been very interesting and pleasant to talk to us here. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for your time, and look forward to your making further progress in your objectives. So thank you once again, Jill. This has been Wilderness and Wildlife, a presentation of the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. To hear more of these half-hour interviews, go online to kgvm.org or to buzzsprout.com. You can see our website at js-wilderness.com. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Jay Schell.